You know, but I was thinking as I as he made sure that I had a hard copy out this morning. Monty led Happy today, and I was kind of tapping on my Bible, and he's watching, and then he's like, So he starts tapping on his Bible. It reminded me of the story of the woman who every time she would cook a roast, she'd cut the end of it off, and her husband finally said, "Why do you do that?" "Well, my mom always did that." And the husband asked his mother-in-law, "Why do you do that?" And he said, "Well, my pan was too small, and so I always had to cut the end of the roast off. And this woman's doing it because her mom always did it." So Brooks, 20 years from now, he's going to be tapping his Bible, and somebody's going to be looking at him like, "What are you doing?" "Well, Papa taps his Bible. Therefore, something good must come from that." Jason, appreciate your prayer. Hey, you know, this morning, my mind has gone in a lot of different places. I was sitting there, you know, listening to class this morning and thinking, why are we here? You know, Jason and Hunter's been doing it, and Jason's taking up the mantle, and we're going through this stuff, and sometimes it's like, man, why are we in the Old Testament learning all this stuff or listening to all this stuff? And this is stuff, you know, that I've heard my whole life and forgotten a lot of it. And, you know, as we're going through class and I'm listening to some of these nuances and stuff, it begs the question sometimes in our life, why are we here? Why are we spending any time kind of in the Word? Why am I spending time in the Old Testament? I get that a lot, you know, especially with teenagers are like, man, why do you spend so much time in the Old Testament, Kevin? And it's, you know, Melanie started a thing at the beginning of the year, and I force invited Lana and I into it. She's laughing because she's like, yeah, you did. You kind of hijacked my Bible study. But it was an attempt for some accountability, maybe, is the right word. Her Bible study this year has been on the premise of knowing God. And looking and studying and spending some time in Scripture with the premise of saying to know God. A good friend of our family that is a preacher, J. Don Poindexter, used to say that when you pick up the Bible, oftentimes we pick it up with the mindsets of right and wrong, of this is what you do, this is what you don't do. But he said, when you pick up the Bible, pick it up and spend time in it, coming to know God and knowing his power. And so I want to challenge, here's one for you, Job 26:14, as you think about that concept. But I say all of that to say that oftentimes we find ourselves in these environments because we're supposed to be in these environments. A lot of us showed up this morning habitually, got ready, put our boots on, put our nicer clothes on, and came to church because it's what we've always done. Or maybe it's new and it's fresh, but the reality is it's brought us all to this place, and for what purpose? Through my life, I've heard a lot of different purposes. I've heard because this is what I'm supposed to do. Don't forsake the saints. I've heard that. I've heard all of these ideas, and so many of these ideas fit into the nature and the characteristic of what Paul is trying to fight with in the book of Romans. So many times we do so many things because we've watched, we've observed. It wouldn't surprise me 2 weeks from now if Brooks is tapping on his Bible. Because he's tapping on his Bible because someone who he values was doing that. And so surely that must, or maybe it's I cut the end of my roast off. But so many of us function life based solely on our interpretation of those who have gone before us. And we forget the premise of what God has intended for us to be a part of. We sometimes lose track of the certainty of what brings us together. We lose sight of that. And I was thinking about a word as you prayed this morning, Jason. I'm not going to pick on you too much, I promise. But vulnerability. and how raw vulnerability is. And as I was thinking about that word, as Jason prayed this morning, I so many, Lana and I visited this morning before we came to church. And so many times, and I think it's Hunter and Kyle's fault predominantly, but so many times when I think of my sermons and think of Scripture, I think of Genesis. I go back to this place in Genesis where, you know, before the fall, it's interesting to me that when God looks for Adam and Eve in the garden, they had covered themselves after they had sinned. Which, again, you have to understand that if they covered themselves, they were hiding who they were, which means prior to that, they were naked. Everybody with me on that? Which means I am fully vulnerable in the presence of God. I am fully vulnerable to who God is, and so my life is going to be a representation of nothing other than God. And I have no shame in who I am before God. And so they were completely vulnerable. And after sin enters into the world, they begin to hide themselves. They begin to conceal their vulnerability. And they begin to, we do that as humans, don't we? We start building these layers. We start building these layers of protection and hedges around ourselves. And we do it in our subconscious because we've been hurt. Or maybe somebody's done something to us that's violated us. And so we protect. But in this hedging that we do, in this covering ourselves up, we do that with God. And so we are no longer vulnerable. And what I love, believe it or not, this has to do with Romans, all right? This is not how I planned on starting this lesson this morning, but this is where we're at. Because the reality is, what Paul is trying to do in the first three chapters of the book of Romans is strip us down. He's trying to take all the layers off. All the layers that we place around ourselves that make us feel like we're something we're really not. Whether it's to the Gentile and how in chapter 1 he has disclaimed to them and proclaimed to them, listen, God has given you over to your sinfulness. Even you have this moral code that is hardwired into you. You know what's right and wrong. Lana and I were talking about that this morning. I was like, you know, she's like, you said something last week, I want to talk about it. So we talked about it. And I appreciate that. But the reality is, it's like, I told Lana, it's what we do with our kids from the very beginning. Every parent out there, regardless of religious affiliation, regardless of whether they even have a religious affiliation, start from the very beginning teaching their kids what? Right and wrong. Don't do. Do. Don't do. Every parent I've ever watched does this. Maybe some more than others, right? Because I know some elementary teachers are like, I don't think anybody ever taught that kid anything. Right? But the reality is, there may be measures of it. There may be levels of it. There may be Lana, who is very intense, right? She's going to maybe teach it a little bit heavier. That's why Hunter's got a tick. All right, and some parents are maybe a little bit more laxed about that, but the reality is, regardless of religious affiliation or whether they even believe in God, hardwired into us is this idea of right and wrong, this idea of good and bad. And no matter where you come from, whether Romans 1 speaks to you because you are just so far away from God that he has given you over to your sinfulness, or whether you're in Romans 2 where you sit in church and you do all the religious things right, Paul is saying none of it has any value. None of it. I'm stripping you down to your most vulnerable place. I'm stripping you down to your nakedness. Because unless we get to that place, regardless of who we are, is anybody in here think you're a good person? Yeah, four of y'all. I like it. Why? I mean, what basis do we use for that goodness? Let me ask you, all four of you that raised your hand, Have you ever done anything bad? But have you done more good than bad? We start getting into this chasing of, I've done more of this than this. And the reality is, Paul is telling even to the Jews, even to the religious elites, listen, there's something fundamentally you're missing. You're missing your why. You're trying to do all these things. You're trying to be obedient. You're trying to follow the law. You're trying to do all of these things right so that you can come into relationship with God, and you will never achieve relationship with God from that perspective. That's what Paul's saying. It's like a thermometer. What value does a thermometer have? I shouldn't ask questions because everybody's like, should we answer? This is the sermon. This isn't Bible class. A thermometer does one thing. It tells you what? Temperature. Doesn't solve any problems, does it? How about a thermostat? Oh. Well, a thermostat not only tells you the temperature, but you have an ability to manipulate that temperature. The law is a thermometer. It's telling you something about you. You're not great. There's not enough good in you to overcome the bad in you. What does Jesus say on the Sermon on the Mount? Though you think you have mastered the letter of the law by being someone who has modified your behavior so that a people, when they see you, they see a law follower. He's saying, if you've done these things in your mind, in your heart, you've violated the law. You violated not only a piece of the law, but the whole law. The law should do is a thermometer. It should point us to something. It's too hot in here. But it's got no ability to change the heat. The law can't save you. If for those of us who are chasing God via obedience, I'm not saying obedience is a bad thing. I'm saying we get them in the wrong order. I'm saying the obedience that we have to God should come from somewhere else, not in our ability to find God. Because if we're looking for God, He's there. Are you vulnerable enough? Have you been stripped down enough to genuinely come into relationship with God? Because see, it doesn't matter if you were the Jew, the religious elite. It doesn't matter if you were the Gentile. If you're chasing God by any other means than Jesus Christ, you're only going to find a glimpse of who He is and not the fullness of who He is. Paul is stripping people down for one purpose. I'm trying to strip you down for one purpose. So that when we get in the back half of chapter 3, you might cling to that with all of who you are, because you realize, you see, you know that without that, it doesn't matter how good you are. Without that, it doesn't matter how bad you are. Without that, there is no redemption. Romans chapter 3, starting in verse 20. I'm going to read it out of whatever version is in the pew. Actually, start verse 21. Oh, wait, let's do 20. Because by the works of the law, no flesh will be justified in His sight. He's stripping you down. He's stripping you down. He's saying, because by the works of the law, by the ability to do and to achieve right living based on the law, no flesh will be justified in His sight. For through the law comes the knowledge of sin. It's the thermometer. You know, sometimes I walk in church, and I walk in here, and I feel like I'm walking in a sauna. I thought I'd get at least 2 amens on that. And then, not only do I feel like I'm walking in a sauna, I am told I do not have permission to change it. See Aaron. Y'all with me, aren't you? Yeah. And some of y'all colder people are like, I don't know what he's talking about. And that is us. The law should reveal to us. Yikes! It should reveal to us the necessity of something different. It should reveal to us that no matter how good I am, there's got to be something else. It's knowing, not just knowing God, but knowing the power of God. Knowing what God's intentions are with mankind. God's intentions for mankind after the fall wasn't that you perfect the law, but to know the perfect one who has. Because we're going to get into some text and get into some words that are super confusing. And we're going to break those down over the next 2 weeks, I promise. But now apart from the law, verse 21, the righteousness of God has been manifested. Separate and apart from the law, the righteousness of God has been manifested, being witnessed by the law and the prophets, even the righteousness of God through faith in Jesus Christ for all those who believe. For there is no distinction. Again, he stripped you down. He stripped you down and man, anybody like being vulnerable? Jason, you're a big tough guy. You could probably beat me up. You don't like being vulnerable. And in this place of vulnerability, so many in our life, in our world, get to this place of vulnerability, sometimes by their own decisions, sometimes by their own choices, and they get into this dark, deep hole of vulnerability, and there is no escape for them, and they'll take their life, or they'll do something drastic because of this vulnerability. And in that vulnerability is where God can speak if we're listening. In that vulnerability is where you should be speaking. So many times I run into people who are struggling in life, and they're looking for answers, they're looking for respite. And how many times am I offering who God is into that light, into that darkness, into that vulnerability? Because in that vulnerability is the opportunity for us to hear God. But in that vulnerability, as Paul has stripped them down, they're longing for the words that he's getting to right here. They're longing to hear what he has to say because they're vulnerable right now. Paul has told them, I don't care if you're a Gentile, you're a sinner. I don't care if you're a religious leader, you're a sinner. I don't care who you are, you have fallen short of the glory of God. Ooh, we don't like hearing that because we're like, I go to church every week and on Wednesdays when we're open. I pay my taxes. I try to be a good neighbor. At least they think I'm trying to be a good neighbor. But what I say behind closed doors might not be the same thing as what I would tell them. But I try so hard to be a good person. Well, congratulations. Some of the best people I know are Muslim. Just being honest. So if your goodness doesn't achieve for you what God has intended for you, and you're stripped down to this place of uncertainty, you need to hear what Paul has to say next. For all have sinned, verse 23, and fallen short of the glory of God. Right here. Being justified, that's the one word we're going to spend some time on next week. Being justified as a gift by his grace through the redemption, there's another word we're going to spend some time on next week, which is in Christ Jesus, whom God displayed publicly as a, oh, here's a word we really don't know how to handle, propitiation, in his blood through faith. This was to demonstrate his righteousness, because in the forbearance of God, he passed over the sins previously committed. For the demonstration, I say, of his righteousness at this present time, so that he would be just
and the justifier of the one who has faith in Jesus. Anybody need to hear that? Oh, so you're saying, Kevin, since you've proven to me that though I might be good by human standard, it's not good enough. And now all of a sudden I'm in this quandary of, well, what's good enough? So what you're saying, Kevin, is there's hope for me, a sinner, who maybe knows he's not good or has been chasing goodness. I love the Christmas song. I'm not a big Christmas fan. Lana is a huge Christmas fan. Matter of fact, we've been watching Christmas movies already because it's November. Yeah. What's that? Oh, yeah. Papa likes Christmas movies. But my favorite Christmas song of all time is To Be Good for Goodness Sake. So many of us fall into that category. We're being good for the sake of being good. Not even realizing why. We're trying to gain something or achieve something. Maybe it's to be on the good list versus the naughty list. So many times in our life, that's how we function. We function out of our humanness, and in our humanness, we like to achieve. Any achievers out there besides Hunter? We want to know that my hard work, my effort, my ability can do this. Recently, this was kind of fun for me in a backwards, cynical kind of way. But Hunter ran into a customer that he couldn't convince. And he was just like, man, it didn't matter what logic. There was perfect logic. I couldn't convince him that he was looking at this wrong. And sometimes God's got to get us to that place where it's like, no matter how good I am, there's still something missing. And it's, you know, I told Lana this morning, we so, in the church circles, we so use Jesus as a Band-Aid. It's like, hey, God, I got this. This is, we're good. Ooh, over here, not so good. Can I use a little Jesus here? Patch me up. Heal me up over here. Don't need you over here. I'm good. But over here, I could use a little bit of Jesus. Over here, I could use a little Jesus maybe for a month or two. But then I got it. You guys seeing and hearing the hypocrisy in that? I don't need all of you, Jesus. My whole life doesn't need you. Just these pieces that I can't control. Or I can't manipulate. If that's you, reread chapter 2 and come here next week, stripped down, vulnerable, ready to hear of the blessed gift of Jesus Christ. Because until we get stripped down of our own arrogance, or we feel like we can do something, you won't ever fully appreciate the fullness of Jesus Christ. Because I think sometimes in our religious circles, we're treating Jesus like a patch job. He's only fixing the pieces we need him to fix. So you have deemed what you need and what you don't need. You have deemed where you're right and where you're wrong. That's a dangerous place to be. No less, no more dangerous than the Gentiles in chapter 1. Looks different, but they end in the same place. To fully appreciate the magnitude of the gift of the cross, to the, not only the gift of the death of Jesus Christ, but the life of Jesus Christ, to fully in just sink into that. Sometimes we have to feel like we're spiritually drowning. As I was thinking about that concept, there's been a few times in my life I used to hate water. Because when I was a kid, I fell in a lake. And then once I fell in a lake, once my grandpa threw me in a lake, you know, I had lots of experiences with water. Therefore, I just avoided it at all costs. But there's no feeling like just feeling like you're drowning. And I think sometimes in our approach to God, that's exactly how we feel. Because we know who God has called us to be, yet we struggle. And we go underwater. And then we hear a truth. We get just a nudge of air. And then we go, and this process that we live our spiritual life oftentimes is exhausting. I know in my life, I get exhausted trying to be good, trying to be right, trying to be someone who is accepted by God. And if you're weary in that place, if you're exhausted, you really need to be here next week. You really need to experience and see the fullness of who Jesus is. The fullness of his sacrifice. And what that means to us in this life. This morning I want to challenge y'all with that word. If there's anything that we can do for you this morning, I'd ask that you come as Monty leads us in an invitation.